It's certainly good to be with you all again this evening. And this evening, I hope to bring a lesson to you that will help to encourage us all to better prepare and to help others in our life. Now, this evening's lesson's topic is going to be about what kind of companions we spend our time with. A lot of times we hear lessons about evil companions, but I want to bring a little slight twist on it that will help us when we're dealing with people in this world. And that is a simple phrase in which I've taught of my lesson, and that is the phrase that we've heard. And you hear it sometimes hollered out. You hope you don't hear it. But whenever you do, you see usually a couple of people running. And that is, stop, thief! Now, we ask the question, what does that have to do with evil companions? Well, think about it this way. We ask ourselves this question. Do we spend time with others when we shouldn't? And are we stealing that time from the Lord? Now, we have kind of a little bit of a teeter-totter that we deal with here. We realize that as Christians, we are in the world, but we're not of the world. We also realize that it's our duty to spend time teaching other people. We also must realize that it's very easy for the world, in a way, to teach us, to corrupt us. And so this evening, what I want to do is, as we study this evil companions, I want us to keep this in mind, keep the thought process in mind that we can very easily be stealing time from the Lord when we should be teaching others, they're teaching us. And we, of course, have a little bit of an outline here in Proverbs chapter 1. In verses 10 through 19, we have a passage that very well tells us what happens with evil companions. So we're going to start out reading that. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19. Proverbs chapter 1, verses 10 through 19. He says, my son, if sinners entice you, do not consent. He says, if they say, come with us, let us lie in wait to shed blood. Let us lurk secretly for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them alive like Sheol, and whole like those who go down to the pit. We shall find all kinds of precious possessions. We shall fill our houses with spoil. Cast in your lot among us. Let us all have one purse. My son, do not walk in the way with them. Keep your foot from their path, for their feet run to evil, and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird, but they lie in wait for their own blood. They lurk secretly for their own lives. So are the ways of everyone who is greedy for gain. It takes away the life of its owners. So we see here, he's very plain in dealing with evil companions. We have a perspective here of a father to his son. He's saying, if sinners say this, don't listen to them. Do not consent. We have to stop and consider that they're doing evil. They're doing things that they ought not to do. And you'll notice, too, just like so many we see today, they promise good things, but they don't talk about the bad. We, of course, see illustrations of this every day in our life. Think about a beer commercial. What do we see? We see beer being advertised. Everybody's having a great time, aren't they? They're partying. Everyone's loving life. But what don't they show? Well, they don't show the person who's drank one too many. He's over here emptying his guts out in the bathroom. They also don't show the scene that's horrific on the road where someone decided that they were okay to drive after they're drinking, and then they have a head-on collision and kill a family. You know, one thing we'll notice is whenever we're dealing with sin, nobody talks about the consequences. So what does he say? Well, he says you must not spend time with people, such people as these. But yet we have to teach them. So what's he getting at? Well, the easy solution when he says don't spend time is to stay away from such friends. Now, these type of friends are those who are quick to do evil. It doesn't matter where you're at. Maybe you're at work, maybe you're at school. There's always someone saying, hey, you got to try this, or hey, you should do this. If you haven't been asked a question like that, if you haven't been, you know, asked in school, well, hey, try out this drug. Wait till you get older. Then you go to work. Then they'll find out you haven't done some stuff. Maybe they'll find out, oh, wait, you've never been to a strip club. You got to try this out. It's great. This is the way they don't understand. They're thinking, here's something that they see as being great, but they don't talk about the downfalls. But you know what? When the time comes, what do they end up paying for all their joys? Well, in the end, they pay with their life, either physically or ultimately spiritually, is what they end up paying with. You know, there's a great danger of spending time with evil people. People can be very persuasive. And it's not just when they're offering to do bad stuff that, you know, we've all talked about. We've all heard about parents warning their children, teachers warning their children. But what about the stuff when we don't realize that we're being persuaded? What about situations we get into that may not be in and of itself bad? I'll give you an example. Has anyone ever worked in construction? What kind of an environment is the construction site? Is it a very Christian environment? Not usually. In fact, you'll probably hear more profanity working on a construction site than a lot of other places. What happens, though? What do you find out when you work in a construction site, maybe a factory or something like that? And, of course, it even creeps its way into the office. What do you find? Even if you don't personally swear or use curse words, you find that after a while you stop hearing them. You don't pick up on them anymore. And maybe you don't say them out loud, but maybe when something happens, maybe you hit your hand or your toe or something like that. What pops up into your mind? Well, you've been so immersed into it that that's what happens. Everybody says that. You know, you have a great temptation. You know, we see a great example of persuasion, of course, with Adam and Eve, right? What happened with Eve and the serpent? I mean, was anything just jumping out saying, hey, we need to avoid this? No, we had three things, and we'll notice these three things pop up frequently. You know, of course, we've all heard of them. So lust of the flesh. You know, the serpent said it's good for food. We have the lust of the eyes, it's pleasant to the eyes. And there's the pride of life. It was desirable to make someone wise. We see this in Genesis chapter 3 and verse 6. You know, we have these things. And of course, when you look at sin, this is what happens. When you look at someone trying to convince you to do something, this is what they're saying. They're saying, you know, hey, it's good, it's pleasant, it's desirable. We look at many of the sins that go on today. You know, one of the easiest that is already commonplace now is, you know, people living together outside of wedlock. You know, it's great, is what they say, you know. They're saying, it's easy this way. We don't have to worry about all this other stuff. We just have to, you know, do it. It's kind of like a trial run. You know, one guy that I worked with for a while, an atheist, he said, well, wouldn't you try out a car before you bought it? That was his argument. Wouldn't you try out a car before you bought it? He's saying, you know, why get into a permanent relationship when you can try it out and see if it works? But what happens many times? When you look at statistically, what happens many times? Even if you've done this, quote-unquote, trial relationship, what is going to happen? Well, a lot of times it ends up in divorce. So how did that help out? Well, it didn't really. But it's just one of the many excuses. You know, many times we see infomercials. What's the famous line? But wait, there's more. Many times people will offer us things that seem great. You know, they'll maybe offer us something that may provide wealth without work. Now, before I started preaching full-time, I was a salesman. Now, you want to meet a nice bunch of people. There's a reason that there is a stigma attached to them. And I'm not saying all salesmen aren't. You can be a perfectly good salesman. But some of the people that I worked with, they had rule books, and we read through the rule books. And according to the law, you know, we followed these rule books. You know, you didn't lie, you didn't cheat, you didn't steal, all this kind of stuff. But what happened when we went out, after we got through all the material, we go out on the street and the guy says, okay, he says, I know you just learned that, but he says, here's how we really do it. And so when I was training for one of my positions, I got to follow around a guy, and I would say he was a masterful liar. He got in places that we weren't even supposed to be in to make a sale. He was offering, you know, wealth without the work. I mean, you know, you just lie a little bit. You don't tell the truth. You make that sale, and then, you know, it doesn't really hurt anybody. Or perhaps, you know, pleasure without commitment. You know, we have a lot of people go around, and they have, what, one-night stands or something. Pleasure without commitment. It sounds extremely easy, doesn't it? A lot of this stuff is just easy to go ahead and do. A lot of these sins, you know, you just slide on in there. You know, when we're told to teach the people the world, we have to be very watchful of ourselves. We must remember that these people aren't looking out for our best interest, even if they think they might be. In the United States, what is our motto? What do we look out for? You know, if you ask most people, who do you look out for? Of course, it's ourselves. We look out for number one. Ultimately, when it comes down to it, who are we most concerned about? Well, we want to focus on ourselves. Remember, these people are ignoring the cost of sin. But we have to remember that sin is going to destroy those who possess it. Sin eventually possesses those, exposes those who continue in it. You know, the Bible tells us plainly in Numbers 32:23, he says, be sure your sin will find you out. And one great example of this is lying. Everyone lies today. In fact, if you look it up statistically, it's a norm. If you don't tell a lie, you're the odd man out. And, you know, a lot of people don't do it to hurt anybody. You know, they may lie to not hurt somebody's feelings, or they may lie to just smooth something over. But what happens when you tell a lie? What do you have to do? Well, you have to remember that lie. And then you tell another one, and you build on that lie. And the trend goes on. So what ends up happening is you have all these lies that you got to remember. Now what happens when you slip up? Maybe you lied to not hurt somebody's feelings. When they find out that you were lying to them, how do you think that makes them feel? Or when you lie to get ahead, what happens? Well, maybe you get a reprimand. Maybe you lose your job or something like that. You know, the amazing thing about it with being a Christian is when we don't lie, it doesn't matter how bad our memories are. If we don't have to remember a lie, we don't have to worry about it. You know, if I tell you the truth the first time, guess what? If I forget what I told you and you ask me the same question again and I tell you the same thing, there's no problem. You know, sin requires lies and deception, even if we're talking about something besides lying. And eventually someone's going to get caught. We also have to remember sin often carries a physical price that can't be hidden. You know, we think about these people who do with drugs. What happens? We have drug addiction. We think of people who are enjoying this pleasure without commitment. What happens? We have STDs. Or maybe unwanted pregnancies. We have all these things that happen. Why? Well, it's because we spent time with the wrong people. Around the wrong people. You know, evil companions are never going to talk about the cost of sin. They don't want to do that. Because if they talk to you about the cost of sin, they have to think about the cost of sin themselves. Sometimes you run into people when you try to talk to them about the Bible, they get upset with you. Now, why is that? Well, because you're making them look at themselves. You're making them realize what they have to do. We deal with people all the time who aren't doing the right things. Many of us have relatives who aren't doing the right thing. I'll give you an example for myself. I had a grandmother for many years. She made the decision that she wanted to move on and not stop being a Christian and leave her husband, all this kind of stuff. And so we have a situation which going on. Here's grandma who wants to spend time at the holidays with her family. She wants to spend time with the grandkids. Now, grandma's not leading the right example for us grandkids. Grandma's not teaching us through her example what we should do. So what do you do? It's very difficult, isn't it? Thankfully, I was young enough that I didn't have to make that call, but, you know, my parents and aunts and uncles had to. And so what did they do? Well, they made sure that when grandma came, she understood. You're welcome to come and spend time with us, but we're going to talk about what is going on here. We're going to talk about the sin that needs to be dealt with. And so as long as she understood that, she was welcome to come. If she didn't want to deal with that, then she wasn't welcome. Now, we think about this. When we go out and spend time with people, we work with a lot of people. Most of the people we work with aren't Christians. They may be good, nice people, maybe even moral people, but they're not Christians. Now, what do we talk about with them? Well, what happened yesterday? We had several teams play, didn't we? Alabama played, Auburn played. So I'm sure this next week we'll talk about football. We'll talk about the scores. We'll talk about what plays we saw. Maybe we'll talk about the ball boy who almost outran the running back when Auburn was playing. Stuff like that. Is there anything wrong with that? Absolutely not. We talk about stuff we're interested in. We're Christians. Are we interested in the Bible? Do we talk to people about the Bible? You know, it's interesting. When we look at evil companions, we hear people say, don't listen to what they have to say. Proverbs 1, you know, it says, don't give in to them. But yeah, we have to spend time with these people. They're teaching us through examples. They're teaching us through spending time with them. We're not supposed to walk in their path. But that doesn't mean we can't help them out. You know, we work with these people. We build a relationship with these people. Maybe we worked with this person for 15 years. Have we talked to them about God? And we said, hey, why don't you come down and worship with us? Maybe they don't want to worship. Say, hey, you want to get together and have a study or something? You know, it tells us not to spend time with evil companions, not with these friends. But he doesn't tell us not to teach them. You know, we have to realize that when he says don't spend time with evil companions, he's not saying don't try to save them. It's interesting, you know, when we look at people, we automatically, you know, make judgments according to our beliefs or maybe something we view. But what does God say? Well, you know, the gospel is for all. When I went through college, we had something called group projects, and I hated those things. Why? Because you had to rely on other people. And what do you know about college students for the most part? Well, they don't do their work. They wait until the last minute. And so if you're trying to be a good student and get your stuff done, you have to deal with other people. Well, in one of my classes, I got assigned a young lady who was sitting a couple seats down from me. And when I heard her name called, I kind of just put my hand in my head. Because if you were to look at her from a perspective, what would you see? Well, you know, she was, you know, I guess a white girl, average, you know. She had red hair and stuff, fairly attractive. And her arms and everywhere else was covered with tattoos. She had tons of piercings. She had a nose ring. I'm thinking, what am I going to do? But you know what? Out of all the people I had that I had group projects with, she was probably the best. She was one of the nicest girls you work with. She spent more time making sure we had our stuff done than anyone else. You make judgments about people. You know, we look at that and say, oh, there's somebody that's evil. There's someone that I really don't want to spend time with. I had another group project where, you know, I had a couple of us, and we went over to this one girl's house, and, you know, if you were to look at her, you know, she looked just like us, dressed clean, you know, looked good. Went in her apartment, and she's sitting there smoking a joint. That's not a very good environment to be in. And I'll tell you, when I left all the way home, I had my windows rolled down hoping I didn't pass a police car because, you know, you got the smell on you. But, you know, you're sitting here, okay, here's a situation of evil companions. So what do you do? She said, hey, you want some? I was like, no, thanks. I don't smoke, and here's why. You know, and it's one of these things we realize. You know, we spend time with evil companions. We spend a lot of time around people who are of the world. What are we doing about it? Are we living our life separate? One of the examples I like to think of is, you know, a lot of times, I think as Christians, it's really easy to get into, and I call it the monk mindset. What do monks do? Well, what do? They live up on a mountain, and they isolate themselves. Why? Well, they're trying to purify themselves and make sure that they're doing what they need to do. So they're staying away from the world, but what are they doing for the world? You know, even if we get ourselves perfectly clean, perfectly ready, we have what? We have a command to go out and teach the word, and if we're not doing that, well, sitting by ourselves in a isolated closet isn't going to help us out any. But I think the most telling is, you know, Matthew 11:19, what do we see? Jesus is a friend of sinners. Jesus spent time around sinful people. But the question is, what did he spend a majority of time doing with these people? Did he spend time with them, you know, playing board games or hanging out or chilling? Whatever you want to use phrase-wise. What was he doing when he was spending time with them? Now, I'm not saying this is wrong to spend out time hanging with people, spend time playing games with people. In fact, one of the best things you can do for some of the world if they're not willing to come to services, invite them to a function with Christians or something like that. There was a young lady I worked with who loved volleyball. And up in Tennessee, where I'm from, every month we'd get together as a bunch of Christians. We'd play volleyball. So I invited her out one time. And she was shocked. And you know, that's a teaching tool. She was learning what Christians act like. She was seeing how Christians interact. So we have to ask ourselves. We need to be honest with ourselves. Do we influence them more than they influence us? Or are we stealing time from the Lord when we shouldn't? Or are we using the time we have with these people to try to save them? You know, it's very simple. You know, you think about it. If you're spending time with someone, a friend, and they're having trouble with a homework problem, and you know how to fix it, are you going to sit there and watch them? You're going to say, here, let me help you show you how that's done. If we're spending time with people whose souls are in danger of condemnation, are we just going to spend time with them, or are we going to say, hey, guess what? You know, because most of these people already know we're Christians. But if we talk to them about it? Well, this evening, we haven't really talked about how or why we need to get saved. We simply talked about how we spend our time. And so I want us to think, as we conclude this lesson, if you're not a Christian, why not? Because think about this. The world doesn't understand the difference between someone who is a Christian, being baptized, doing things they need to do, and a Christian who, as it were, grew up in a family but hasn't been converted. You know, if you're in a Christian family, they consider you a Christian a lot of times. But how does that look when maybe you decide, hey, you know what, I need to help these people out? And then you try to help them, they're like, but you're not saved. You're not doing what you're trying to tell me to do. How does that look? So this evening, we offer that opportunity for you. You know, realize that we don't know when this life is going to end. You know, we could walk out of this building and not wake up tomorrow morning because Christ returned. What would happen? It's a serious question. You know, where would we end up? You know, there's only two options, and one of them isn't very pleasant. So we obviously want to go to the place and spend eternity with God in heaven. So this evening, we offer that invitation now. If you need to become a Christian, or you need to come forward and have the prayers of the saints and turn your life back to God, we ask you to do so as we stand and sing the song of encouragement.